Success Mat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
It's a good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. Stuart Mandel from Sports Illustrated is going to be with us today. Stuart from Fox Sports and Fox Sports One. Stuart Mandel will be with us. Stuart wrote a strong column on the future of college football and what it's going to look like 10 years from now. And it doesn't include Arizona State and Arizona, just so you know. Just so you know, this is coming. And Stuart's one of those guys. I mentioned SI. I'm living in the past with him. He's with Fox now. And Stuart's one of those guys that if he writes something as powerful as this, to me, it means that he's talked to enough people. This isn't just something where he lays around in a hammock. He's not one of those guys and says, hey, you know, this isn't a bad idea. I'm just going to throw it out there and see if it sticks. So we'll have Stuart Mandel with us. We have not done much college football here in the last few weeks. And I saw where the opening lines are out. I saw where the opening broadcast times are out for the opening weekend of college football. We love college football here. And then I saw the Art Briles story over at Baylor. And I don't know what to make out of what's going on at Baylor other than it can't all be good. And for those that are just into it's all about college football and all the stuff that happens off the field is just kids being kids. No, not when you see this and dig deeper on this. This is just sick what's going on down there. So I'm going to get into that a little bit with Stuart as well. I mean, first of all, I've got to just say right off the top, Eric, have you seen these broadcast times of games, the opening weekend and all that?
I think I have. I glossed over them. I didn't really.
Oklahoma, Houston.
Great game.
9 a.m.
Not a great start time, but a great game.
What are you talking about? Houston's going to be a top 10 team, don't you think?
I believe so. Yeah. I mean, no, but none, the teams don't like playing in that 9 o'clock. I know that's 11 o'clock in Texas, but that's still not a great start time.
LSU Wisconsin comes up after that. This is ESPN's broadcast for opening weekend of college football. So I've got Oklahoma, Houston, LSU Wisconsin, Georgia, North Carolina. Then that night, 5 o'clock our time, Alabama, USC. How could you not be in Alabama, USC? And at the same time, and I'm guessing it's over on CBS, that same day is UCLA, Texas A&M. So I'm very much into that. And then the next night, Sunday night, Notre Dame plays Texas. Yes, right around the corner. It's like I think we're 98 days away from the first college football games.
Lots of big programs with lots of big question marks.
No, that's true. That's true. So I'm looking forward to having Stuart on about that. There was an eighth grader that got offered a scholarship, and we've heard this before, but I want to go into this a little further later on in the show. And then Stuart's column is actually suggesting, and I sent this to you last night. Did you read it all the way through?
I did. I wrote it. I read the entire thing.
And
it's a long read. It's a very well done, well laid out story.
The headline on it is, here's what college football will look like in 2026. And essentially, Stuart is of the opinion that it's going to look like the NFL. Not putting it any other way, right? I mean,
that's the first thing I thought of, Brad.
So if you have a commissioner, the commissioner just comes in and says, we're going to take the schedule away from you guys.
Right.
We're not going to have this SEC nonsense in the third week in November where you're playing Furman anymore. That's not happening in this world.
And you're going to go from having about 50 to 55 relevant schools to 24. And that's it.
And Arizona State and Arizona are not on Stewart's list.
That's correct.
Meaning they would be like a Division II program.
They'd be the next tier, I guess. That's the only way. They'd be tier two.
Is it like in soccer where you get relegated? If you don't play well enough, they move you down. And you can't rig it where you go out and schedule a bunch of patsies and say, hey, look, we had a great season. You can't do that either. So I'm fascinated by all this stuff because
it'd be really sad if that happened, though. Sad. You never see Ian Johnson miraculous ending for Boise State against Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl. A lot of these great moments from some of these quote unquote lower tier programs.
Yeah.
You know, you would never have TCU beating Ole Miss badly in a Peach Bowl because they wouldn't be playing in a high profile game.
You wouldn't
like
have Arizona State beating Nebraska.
That's correct.
You would not have that in this in this environment. But here's the thing that we do know. This much is certain. When these new television contracts expire, and they're not even halfway through, but when they do, and this is what Stuart is getting at, when I threw out the idea of ASU and U of A leaving the Pac-12, the amount of, you've got to be kidding me, versus the amount of people at both universities saying, that's not a bad idea. Because in football, for Arizona State, if they're sitting there playing against Oklahoma State, they're not going to play at Pullman, Washington at 8:15 at night. And the game's not going to end till midnight, which is 3 a.m. on the West Coast. No, in their television agreement, this is assuming the Big 12 can figure themselves out. I got that. They could be playing at 1:30 in the afternoon, 4:30, 3:30 on the East Coast with the chime change that time of year, and actually have people see their product. In Stewart's model, he actually has UCLA, USC, Oregon, and Stanford as the only survivors. The only, I mean, if you're a Washington fan, he's not in this model. Doesn't have you in this model. So there's a lot going on that front. Baylor, it's yesterday outside the lines, dominated the news cycle.
Again.
And this is not because Eric went to TCU. I felt the same way. There's just entirely too much nonsense around what's going on at Baylor. And some of you, whenever I go down this path, I get the, well, she just didn't know what she was doing. You know what? That may be the case because we're talking about 18, 19, 20, and 21-year-old boys and girls, not even men and women in some cases, boys and girls that don't know themselves. All they've known is sports. So they get thrown into a campus, they go to a party, they drink something that's got something, and they wake up the next day and say, what the heck happened? And it feels to me like, and this is, I'm on my third child now going through college. I'm not excusing it away. It just feels to me like adults have to do a better job. We have to do a better job. I don't know if it's education, being more around. If you just are going to say, well, that's just kids being kids, it's not cool to have young ladies claiming that they were sexually assaulted and then it's swept under the rug and, I don't know, police files disappear. And, well, it's really not that big of a deal. The police department down in Waco's involved in this now for a cover-up. In Art Briles' comments, I have yet to see somebody, unless it's happened today, say, I am truly, truly sorry for what has gone on here. Because that is an admitting guilt. The athletic director of Baylor today did an interview here in the last hour over on Sirius and was asked if there was any cover-up collaboration between Baylor and the Waco police, quote, not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. Now that's where we are now. Not to my knowledge.
And let's not be naive to think that cover-ups don't happen at other schools.
Oh, because of course they do.
Of course they do.
Of course they do.
But this is such a poop storm for Baylor. And like we spoke this morning, Brad, this is not something that Baylor thinks eventually the storm is going to come through.
We'll get
to
football season.
The storm is
going to
pass. Yeah, we're just going to get into camp. No. Everyone's radar is up now. And crazy things happen down in Waco. We know that. And that is as college of a college town as you can get. And they support their football program.
Sure they do.
They defend their football program.
Sure they do. Well, it happens here. Gosh almighty, the number of times through the years where somebody gets on my case because I don't support what happens at U of A or I don't support what happens at ASU. That's not our job. You know, when I hear somebody say, well, that's where I went to school and, you know, we've done no wrong. No, that's not how it works. There's no clean programs out there.
But a lot of it is how you handle it. I mean, we remember the Devon Durant situation at ASU. Junior college linebacker comes in, high profile player.
Yep.
Has some issues. Todd Graham, bye, you're done. That's the end of it. Just he kicked off the team, out of the program, bye. No second chances, nothing.
However, okay, the Bo Graham story took the team apart last year.
It did.
In my view.
It did.
Okay, and anybody who's going to sit there and deny that.
But again, that's an internal, that's not
a. Got their face painted, you know, maroon and gold.
But it's a different situation because it involved a staff member, and we didn't know the truth until much, much later. And
well, I don't know if we even knew the truth.
And I don't think that resonates as much as. Losing, you know, an assistant coach doesn't resonate nearly as much to Joe Fan as losing a high-end linebacker who they're expected to do huge things.
No, I agree with you on that.
But yes, internally it did crumble. It didn't help matters when all that went down.
No, it didn't. And then the season just spiraled out of control from there. And, you know, you have six losses later in what was supposed to be a great year. You also have to look at stuff top to bottom, I think, and not just say, well, this is the way it's always been done and this is the way we're always going to be and all that. The Jeff Hornacek hire, I'm going to get to that in a minute because I think that this could impact the Suns roster. And I think it actually may end up working out well for them. The Diamondbacks game last night, my seat wasn't even warm. I don't know about you guys. I'm really into watching when Greinke pitches. I really am, because there's something fascinating about a guy getting all that jack coming here at the top of the rotation. So every time he throws, I'm into that. He throws again on Sunday. It's at St. Louis. It's a tough park. Their schedule, they've dug themselves a bit of a hole here, because now they go to St. Louis today, and then they go to Pittsburgh after that. And those aren't easy series. They're just not easy series, and they're good teams. They're in a bit of – the Giants sweeping them here undid all the good of them sweeping San Francisco. All of a sudden, they're 5.5 back. And I'm fine. Look, they lost. They're going to lose games. They ended up last night falling apart, in my opinion, the very first inning. Shelby comes out, walks the first guy, second guy, home run, you're down 2-0. That doesn't have anything at all to do with looking down at the bullpen and seeing that there's somebody warming up behind him in the first inning. That has everything to do with him walking out there, and the Yankees took it right at him. The play, though, in the sixth inning where Shelby Miller was left in against Jacoby Ellsbury, and I'm watching this, because the basketball game was a blowout last night. I'm watching the Ellsbury situation. They've got Chafin in the bullpen. I like playing manager. I like that. I think that's what baseball is all about, is the chess game, the chess match. If it's me in the sixth inning and Chip walks out to the mound and it's a 2-1 game and the tying run for the Diamondbacks, they weren't able to get through. So Miller's just got to hold on here. He's got to hold on. He's hitting second in the next half inning. And he leaves him out there. And I'm thinking, okay, you're really trying hard now to build this confidence. And something that Randy said to us last week on the air stuck with me of, sometimes guys can't get pulled from games. I'm paraphrasing here, but Randy essentially said, guys can't be worried about being pulled from games. I think there's some of that with Shelby Miller. So he stays in last night. Ellsbury has a terrific average. It's like 5-for-5 in his career against Shelby Miller. So what happens? Shelby Miller gives up the base hit. Game gets blown open as much as it could be in a 4-2 loss. And now Chip Hale is second-guessed about it. They do take 2 of 3 from the Yankees. They're trying every way, shape, and form to sit there with Shelby, but he dug his own hole last night when he walked out to the mound, and it's 2-0 before the seat's even warm. Let's not sit here and just say, well, it was the manager's fault. You can go back on that decision, and then Chapman comes in, and I keep sitting here. 2 years ago, I was banging the drum for Aroldis Chapman. That's who the Diamondbacks need to get. That's who they're going to go after. I've got a feeling on this. Had some people in the team tell me we're going to go after Chapman. They go after Chapman. They don't get him. And then last offseason, well, they're going to go after Chapman. And then we all know what happened to Aroldis Chapman and the domestic violence and the gun and the kids. And then he comes in and throws 101 last night.
Well, and if the Yankees could just figure out a way to get the game to the seventh inning, they're going to win most of it.
Yeah, they are.
The way
they
the back half of
to.
That bullpen. Yeah, they but that's the problem, to. Just getting it to the seventh inning with a lead.
So the Diamondbacks have their second day off in the last 38 days. When you guys don't think that baseball's a grind, this is their second day off in 38 days. It's really not a day off. They have to pack up, say goodbye, get on a plane, go to St. Louis, and open a road trip. 5.5 back, 19-24. On the other side, so Jeff Hornacek and the Knicks, where did this come from? And is Jeff Hornacek going to look at the Suns roster and say, you know, if I added this player and this player, I'm going to talk about those players and who they might be, some free agency stuff on the NBA as well that might be of interest to the Suns. And I'm going to circle back a little bit later on this this eighth grader that gets the scholarship offer and much more. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat.
for in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros. Follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
So yesterday, I'm buzzing around doing my thing. I get a text from Eric Hornacek, story. Work on it. So immediately, this is how it works with us. We just drop. We do, you know, we're out there doing our thing with our families. We're being dads. We're being husbands. And, yeah, we work, but we also have balance. Work and life balance is a big part of what I believe is very important in doing this day in and day out and doing it well. And we do. And so the Hornacek story to the Knicks was just completely, totally out of left field. Jeff Hornacek going to the Knicks, like, so they have Porzingis and they have Carmelo Anthony. And I'm not a Carmelo guy at all in any way, shape, or form, but that was interesting. Carmelo's been around for, I think, 13 years now. And he comes out last week and he said, we need to widen our search. We need to widen our net. And this is when Kurt Rambis was supposed to be the guy. So essentially, he's going alpha male and I'm the guy here and you got to please me and we need to widen our search. So Phil Jackson, as the story goes, meets with Jeff Hornacek in Los Angeles last week. Now, I thought Jeff was going to Orlando. That made a lot of sense to me, but he decides to take the Knicks job. And he's never run the triangle offense, but he's convinced Phil Jackson that he's going to do it. The easy stretch from, it's not even a stretch, the easy way to take this for me is if he's good enough for Phil Jackson, then he probably should have been good enough for here in Phoenix. But, of course, Alvin Gentry was probably should have been good enough for Phoenix, but he went on. Dan Majerle probably should have been good enough for Phoenix, but he went on. Steve Kerr probably should have been good enough for Phoenix, but he went on. So and this is a better move for Jeff. Even though the Knicks are always a mess and they're always a train wreck, he's leaving one train wreck and going to another. And Jeff is a good enough coach. He should be out there. And I don't know how he's going to handle New York media and New York pressure. To me, he seems fine. I don't think Jeff's one of those guys that's going to curl up in a corner and say, oh, my gosh, I have somebody in the newspaper going after me. You know, they're not embracing this hire by any way, stretch here. But nonetheless, he goes to the Knicks. So if you're Jeff Hornacek and you're Phil Jackson and you look around at what your franchise needs and you have Porzingis and you have Carmelo Anthony, do you think Jeff Hornacek, Eric, looks over at the Suns and says, you know, Talenovich is a free agent, really good spot up shooter, spreads the floor. I'm going to make a run at him.
Sure. I mean, he knows that roster just as well, if not better than anyone. So he could I could easily see Hornacek poaching a player or two.
I could easily see Eric Bledsoe saying, get me out of here and get me to New York. There's something about Eric Bledsoe, and yesterday Doug Gottlieb brought it up too, that Eric Bledsoe's a little bit about Eric Bledsoe. When I heard all this mini LeBron stuff, it just drives me crazy. And is he a good player? He's a good player. But here are the Suns with this jammed up backcourt, and they're not going to win a title, and they're not going to be in the. You can roll tape on this and keep it, Jared Nielsen. You can keep it, Iron Man. They're not going to the playoffs next year beyond the first round if they even make it. And I'll give them the benefit to see what happens. But if I'm Jeff Hornacek, I would at least look and say, you know, if I bring Eric Bledsoe here, because they're not trading Booker. Booker's going to be here. And Brandon Knight, you've got to move one of those three guys. And if it's me, and this goes back to the lottery, the Suns are actually in a pretty good spot. Ryan McDonough is in a pretty good spot to do something major here. I mean major. Not just make a move and draft. If they go draft three kids and we sit here on July 1st and they don't do anything else, I'm just going to bang my...
I can't see that happening, though. I just can't see the Suns not doing something.
I'll take this and run it through my ear to the other side.
A lot of people will.
Eric, if they just sit around... But if you're sitting there with the fourth pick, okay.
And we know who Doug Gottlieb likes. If you like point guards, the Suns could have four next year.
No, that's right.
Chris Dunn from Providence, he thinks that could be a great fit here.
But that's one guy's opinion. My thought is, if you have four and you have 13 and you're sitting there with a log jam at guard, could you not take four and Bledsoe and move up? Sure you could. Could you take Bledsoe on his own merit and trade back? Sure you could. Now, I'm not going to sit here and go through all the cap implications of it because you can always find ways to get deals done. You can. When you have the flexibility of 4 and 13, you could trade 4 and 13 and try to move up if you wanted to. But my point is, with Hornacek going now to the Knicks, and with the way that roster is constructed, and Hornacek knows what's out here, and I would say that the Suns did have some bad luck. I would be willing to admit that. But they also made so many dumb decisions on player personnel and just giving contracts out right and left to people who had no business getting contracts. That's part of the deal, too. It's just him going to the Knicks and the Suns sitting here in the abyss with the way the picks are stacked up wouldn't surprise me at all, and I'd actually encourage it. I don't know fitting within the triangle what I would get from the Suns. I know if I'm sitting here and I'm the Suns, I've got to do something. I can't just add the fourth pick and come out and say, ta-da, here we are. And with Hornacek with the Knicks, I'd look that direction. So that caught my eye. The game last night, there was a play in the game last night where Steph Curry went diving into the stands. And I know this speaks somewhat to the culture that we're in nowadays at sporting events, but it also speaks a little bit to the Warriors fans that are there last night. So Curry dives into the stands after a ball. And as he goes into the stands, it's one of those moments he dives and nobody catches him. How do you not have anybody just stand up? No, but then there were pictures of people getting the pictures on their phone.
I know why. Because you've been to enough NBA games, and I have, where you have the floor seats, and then there's a little bit of extra space between the first row. It's not like row one, row two, row three. There's probably twice as much floor space as there is between the other rows because they want to leave that walkway open. And it all happened so fast. I mean, it would have been great.
It's Steph Curry.
Of course.
You dive in front of him, Eric. Do not explain it away. They're on their phones.
Yeah, there's too many people holding their breath.
The guy's looking at him. They're just turning around like, oh, hey, that's
the security guard tried to catch him.
Well, I'm glad somebody tried to.
That guy taking a picture on his phone. Nice.
Come on. Wait, he's bleeding. Let me get a picture.
And Steph says the elbow's fine. It's sore, yada, yada, yada. It doesn't affect his range of motion, yada, yada, yada.
The 15 points in less than 2 minutes last night.
And it's a good break for the Warriors because they don't play again until Sunday.
But how just when you think you've seen most everything out of him. Yes. And I'm sitting there last night watching the game with my wife and my 11-year-old, and I'm just raving about Klay Thompson. People aren't saying anything about Klay Thompson because he's busting his butt on defense. He's playing so hard. He's exerting so much on the defensive end. And I think it was somewhat predictable last night. Look, the Thunder already did what they were supposed to do.
But the Thunder had their chance. I mean, the first half of game two really mirrored the first half of game one, where the Warriors got out to a big lead. The second quarter, the Thunder came back, but the turnovers eventually did in OKC, and you just can't turn the ball over against the Warriors.
What did they have? They had 50. The bench had 50 points. Iguodala and Azili actually showed up with a pulse.
Yeah, Golden State centers played really well last night after doing nothing in game one.
Yeah. And Iguodala didn't do much in game one. And last night he played well, and they had 50 points on the night. So series goes back. Don't care about Toronto-Cleveland tonight. Not watching. This is a night I might actually, I don't know, do something. Something, because there's no baseball, and there's no reason to watch Cleveland and Toronto. There really isn't. Stuart Mandel on the other side. We'll talk with Stuart about his column. Here's what college football will look like in 2026. It's over on foxsports.com. It's very strong, and he will join us next to explain his position on this. Also talked about Arizona State and Arizona, what's going on at Baylor. That's on the other side. I'm Brad Suspant. Stuart Mandel with us now, Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports 1 reporter with Fox Sports. He penned the column, here's what college football will look like in 2026. We've been talking about it quite a bit, and Stuart joins us here for a few minutes on the show. this reads like you see college football shifting towards the National Football League model at some point, Stuart. Is that the best way to put it?
Yeah, I mean, the vision that I laid out does look a lot like a professional league. There's no question about that. It's a 24 team. This is 10 years from now. A 24 team confederation of all of the biggest name programs in the country playing exclusively against each other rather than in their traditional conferences. And the point I made was that, you know, when conference realignment talk stirs up like it is right now with the Big 12, I mean, everybody likes to do their kind of fantasy columns about what it'll look like. And I think the assumption is, because this is where it was a few years ago, that the existing conferences are just going to keep getting bigger and bigger. And I don't think that's going to be the case, because the reason they got bigger in the first place is they all wanted to start their own cable networks, you know, get as many eyeballs as possible in as many different markets as possible, and drive up cable prices. But as we all know, cable is not going to be what it is today,
right,
10 years from now. And I just think it's going to put more of a premium on the content than the, you know, what's your market size and that sort of thing. And honestly, the best way Ohio State or Alabama could drive up its value in that system would be to play the best games possible every single week. So that's the kind of content that, you know, the consumer just has to have.
The line you have, if anything, I expect the next big move to be contraction, not expansion. More accurately, call it a consolidation of power. And to that end, the teams that you lay out, you don't have Arizona State or Arizona in there, and I get it. How would they be able to work their way into this mix?
So it's interesting. When I put it up, a lot of people brought up the possibility of European soccer-style relegation motion, where you could, you know, if you're on the outside, work your way into it, or if you're in it but really bad, work your way down. And, you know, I'd also say that, to illustrate my point in this column, I kind of made it as exclusive as possible. A more realistic version might be that it's 32 teams or 36 teams or something to that effect. And at that point, you would want to make sure that the Phoenix market is represented.
Because I took the stance a few weeks ago that, look, to think that the Pac-12 has got it all figured out and Arizona State and Arizona are sitting out here playing football games in Pullman, Washington at, you know, 8, 9 o'clock at night in November, when they could just as easily be in Stillwater down the road or in Lawrence, Kansas, whatever the Big 12 becomes. I agree with you that these conferences are all going to shift. I just don't think that, as we sit here today, to say it's all going to stay the same in the Pac-12, we're just talking Pac-12, all these conferences are going to shift, I think, when these TV deals go up and they see the numbers that are out there from the Big 10 and the SEC and their television deals. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, the Big 10 and the SEC are pulling away from the other three.
Yep.
In terms of their you know, the amount of money they're bringing in. The Big Ten is going to go into a whole other stratosphere here soon when they make their new deal here in the next year. The other conferences' deals are locked in for a long time, and that's why, as I said in the article, I don't forecast any imminent, you know, massive moving around like we had earlier this decade. You know, that's not going to happen. The boldest thing that would happen in the next 2 years is what the Big 12 is discussing right now, which is taking a couple of the group of five schools, and that's really not going to have a big effect on the rest of the country. But, you know, I think that the big move that Larry Scott tried to pull off in 2010 of basically merging the Pac-12, or I guess Pac-10 at that point, mm-hmm, with the best of the Big 12 was probably just a little bit ahead of its time. It was so jarring and so out of character from college athletics that at the end of the day, people got cold feet, Texas got cold feet, it didn't happen. I do think that the next big move will be something along those lines. You know, I think it's only a matter of time before Texas and Oklahoma say, all right, we're done kind of holding up Iowa State, Kansas, you know, these programs that don't make anywhere near as much money as they do, don't carry nearly as much prestige, that it's really better in their interest to be associated with USC and Oregon and UCLA, these other big name programs on the western half of the country.
Talking with Stuart Mandel. Before I let you go, a couple of thoughts. Baylor, what can you say today is going to, in your view, happen at Baylor or needs to happen at Baylor?
Well, the thing that needs to happen most of all is this report that a law firm has prepared, and apparently the board there has already seen the preliminary findings. They have to make that public. They're a private school, and they, you know, throughout this thing have operated kind of cloak and dagger. in the interest of their students and the community, they need to release those findings. And if those findings do confirm what a lot of the reports, the ESPN Alpha Alliance reports, say, that Art Briles and all the way up to Kenneth Starr knew about some of these incidents of violence among football players and didn't do anything about it, and then some of those guys then went on to commit more incidents, then heads need to roll, because that's just unacceptable.
Arizona State and Arizona, is this a year of just trying to rebuild, reload? You're going to finish behind, or do you think there's some hope in Tempe and Tucson?
No, I think there's hope, because I think that division is very wide open. There's not a there's not an obvious team that you say, well, that team is the overwhelming favorite to win the Pac-12 South, and everybody else is chasing them. You know, I think there's a lot of teams that can win that division. And so, you know, Arizona took a bit of a step back last year, but I do like their prospects going forward. They dealt with a lot of injuries last year. If Solomon can kind of go back to freshman year form, they could be very good. ASU is a real mystery. I mean, there's so many moving parts, pieces there. They're obviously disappointing a year ago. Maybe our expectations of them were a little bit too far ahead. I definitely think the talent's there to have a good season, but it's not like I have a really good read on, is that an 8-win team? Is that a 10-win team? Right. I really don't know.
Right. No, I agree with you. I think it can go either way. As always, I appreciate the time and the insight, Stuart. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Stuart Mandel there, Fox Sports, Fox Sports 1 reporter. Always good to catch up with Stuart, things around the world of college football. Heads should roll at Baylor. That would be interesting. If Art Briles, if this report comes out, we don't see heads rolling in May and June. And not that there'd be enough push, but maybe there would be. I mean, the papers and the press down in Texas are going after Baylor now. Like, the Dallas Morning News was not kind today to Baylor, nor should they be. And I see today where Outside the Lines is doing more on new Baylor allegations. I mean, they're sticking with their story.
I mean, do you think the decision makers at Baylor are so naive they haven't even considered what could be around the corner with Art Briles? I mean, are they internally thinking, okay, we actually may have to let this guy go if this continues?
But yes, the short answer is, do you think they're so naive? Yes. Sports is just a completely different animal.
Yeah, well, they think they're above everything.
Did you see Celebrity Jeopardy the other night?
I did not.
Did you hear about this?
I did not. I love how you just the car just went completely in the opposite direction.
This is to my point.
Do I look like a guy that watches Celebrity Jeopardy?
Yes. So this is my point.
I watch Teen Mom.
Wow. I watch Tiny Toons on occasion. No. So the other night on Celebrity Jeopardy, there's Anderson Cooper, there's Laura Logan, and there's one other person, and they put up a picture of Cam Newton. Mm-hmm. And who is this? And they didn't know. Mm-hmm. And Laura Logan says, we don't do sports. Okay, to your point, when you have presidents of universities, even presidents who think they know sports, shouldn't be around sports, should not be at press conferences with sports. Let the guys that are there in the trenches do the work. But you're going to get a lot more attention if you're the president of the university being out front on the sports thing than you are saying the anthropology department just got this award and that reward. Doesn't mean it's not important. It's just a fact. We have an eighth grader that was offered by Alabama and five other schools in football for a scholarship. Yeah, we'll have that story next. A few other things on my mind. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Part of my week is there's certain shows that I will catch. Like all of you, you have your certain favorites, and I'm not much of a TV watcher these days. If I have time, I'll sit and read a book on the back patio, have a cigar, and enjoy my night. Go swim some laps, go ride a bike, go shoot hoops, go to basketball practice with my son, go see some movies. 60 Minutes is one of those staples for me, though, on Sundays, because I really love the art of storytelling. I love great storytellers. Morley Safer passed away about an hour and a half ago. It broke. I don't know if it passed away overnight. Morley Safer was a true legend with 60 Minutes. And when you talk about a lineup, like a murderer's row of people, whether it was Mike Wallace or Harry Reasoner or Ed Bradley or Andy Rooney or Dan Rather or Morley Safer, the stories that they would tell. There was a story that he did once on artwork and it was three basketballs floating in water. Okay? Like, how is this considered art? He would find angles and turn it into a 12-minute piece that you're like, you've got to be kidding me. That just completely zipped right by. His backstory, though, he was in Vietnam at the war, and he was viewed as a traitor in some people's minds in our country because he had some footage in the Vietnam War, and he came back and was not handled very well, and it was written about. David Halberstam, the great writer of the New York Times, wrote about it, and that was part of Morley Safer's backstory. So I'm bummed. It's one of those guys you look forward to seeing his stories. And 60 Minutes has lost a couple now here in the last, the last year. Andy Rooney passed away too. That story caught my eye. This eighth grader, this story, I texted Jason Jewell earlier this morning. I didn't hear back from him on this. I don't know. Have we ever had an eighth grader in Arizona get offered a scholarship? We've been doing this, Eric, for 4 years now, and I don't follow the recruiting stuff. That's Jared's deal, and you go do great pieces on it. I don't follow as much as I used to. But I'm trying to think, have we ever had an eighth grader in Arizona?
There are reports.
Yeah?
There are reports.
Yes.
That a kid by the name of Trey Martin, who will be a freshman next fall, has an offer from Fresno State. There are reports of that.
Where's he go to school?
He's going to go somewhere out by where you live. Somewhere in the far East Valley.
Oh, moved so he's from, in the Wild West, where one day he could be at one campus.
Correct. Moved from
actually one Yuma. Hour.
He could you, be at moved from Yuma to the Valley.
He could be at Perry for an hour, and then Hamilton for an hour, and then Chandler for an hour, and then Basha for an hour, and then Campo Verde for an hour. It's like the Wild West out where I live. It's funny, actually. Was it just yesterday? Was Hamilton had a wide receiver just drop in from Cesar Chavez?
Surprise! Surprise! A complete surprise. We had no idea. We had no idea.
I'm not going to sit there and blame Steve on this because I'm out there, Eric, and there's people that it's like Mountain Point for years and years. Well, they just have all the kids get on the bus out of Casa Grande and they come on up, and that's how that they get around that loophole. And now they're closing off the buses, so Mountain Point won't be as good. There's always stuff. And it's the dorms over at Chaparral. Well, they have dorms built right across the street. And now there's a whole bunch of apartments going up across from Hamilton. So now they're going to have dorm rooms. You're never going to be able to close this off. An eighth grader. Why would Fresno State be the first one on that? That's random.
Just what I heard.
That's what you heard.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Alabama offered a football scholarship to eighth grader Jesse Mendoza. So here is Jesse, who Jesse doesn't look like an eighth grader at all. And he, his high school coach, Jesse Machado. We didn't get it? All right, we didn't get it. My bad. Anyways, that's what Alabama did. They offered this eighth grader. He's 6 foot. If you see a picture of him, you'll be like, okay, that kid's not an eighth grader. He's already had verbal offers from Iowa State, Michigan State, North Carolina State, and West Virginia. This kid's in eighth grade, so he's like, I don't know, what would he be? He'd be 14? 14. But when I saw the picture of him, he looked like he probably about 16 years of age. So that caught, we may have a picture before the show is done. That caught my eye. That was interesting. There was one other thing. Oh, I didn't get into this with the Suns. So some people had sent me notes saying, do you think that the Suns, with the space that they have, are going to be active this year in free agency? And the names they threw at me were Dwight Howard and Al Horford. And these are fans. These are like season ticket holder fans. Why in their right minds, and I'm thinking about this when they asked me, why in their right minds would they want to bring Dwight Howard here? And then the other side of me says, well, if you're desperate for attention and you want to show what you're all about, even though it would be the absolute wrong move, it's like when Shaq came here. Was there any rhyme or reason when Shaq came here? And was that the beginning of the end of the Suns when Shaq rolled in here? And I could say quite straightforward, yes. Yes, it was. And then when Steve left, that was another big blow and all that stuff. Steve Kerr, not Steve Nash. The other day they mentioned was Al Horford. Al Horford's 29 years of age, 15.7 boards. Can I see Al Horford from Atlanta here with the Suns? Those are a couple names that fans have been asking about. And on either case, I can't sit here and say, yes, you should definitely go do it. And certainly not Dwight Howard. Certainly not Dwight Howard. All right, do we have the picture of the kid? I think we have the picture of the kid now. There he is. Yeah, so that is what a... That's what a 14... What do you think, Eric? 14?
Something like that. But he has the... You can see he has the makeup to be a beast. He just... He has that body frame and the dimensions that he's going to grow and he's going to fill out and he's going to really start lifting weights.
Alabama. Okay.
How's that, you know?
Alabama.
You go to your friends in eighth grade. What'd you do? Oh, nothing. I just got off the phone with Alabama. They offered me. Wait, you're in eighth grade.
You're in eighth grade.
You haven't even played one snap of high school
football. You haven't gone
yet.
To homecoming. You haven't gone to
That's
prom.
That's correct. Can't drive.
Can't drive. What else can you do when you're 16?
Well, I mean, Spencer Rattler here is got offers early in his freshman year, the pinnacle quarterback.
Yeah, that, no, that's true. That's true, but man, eighth grade.
Yeah, it's
and that goes back to
young.
7-on-7 and satellite camps and club. 7-on-7 is a new club basketball. They find out about kids in 7-on-7 very early. And David Shaw says he's not going to take any part of 7-on-7. We were talking about commissioners. I should have asked Stuart this. Commissioners for college football. David Shaw would be a guy at the top of my list if he ever decided he didn't want to do football, to be a coach anymore. I don't know. Offering an eighth grader, man. But there's other sports where they go out. If they're a tennis player, they're a golfer, they're on the radars too. So Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Plenty of content up on our website right now. You can check out at Sports360AZ.com. We're Arizona-centric. Thanks for being with us.